Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of KickServeRadio.com Tennis on Air with Andy Zoden. Today, I've got a very special red carpet guest for you. I am joined by the great Chris Everett. Chris, it is so nice to be able to catch up with you during the holidays. Thank you so much. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andy, except it's pouring rain here in South Florida, so that's kind of a bummer, but everything else is really good.
Kind of what you get for living in South Florida. You need to come spend some time with us out here in Denver, Colorado.
You know, I actually spend every summer in Aspen.
That's right.
So for the last like 25 years and with the boys, and it's so beautiful there. And I prefer the summers there. Thank you very much.
With
than the winters.
My good friend, Randy Crawford, out there at Maroon Creek, correct?
He's the best.
Isn't he?
He's the best. Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, we love Randy. Of us former Texans grew up idolizing Randy Crawford as well as Chris Everett. Chris, you won 1,309 matches in your career. And we just had a situation earlier in 2015 where Roger Federer won his 1,000th. He's got a long way to go to catch up with you. How easy or difficult is it to get your arms around that number at this point in your life?
It's been so long, I really don't think about it at all. But I think when you compare me with Roger Federer, I think that back in the 70s, it was a lot easier for a girl of 15 and 16 to be the top women than it would have been for a boy 15 or 16 to be the top men.
True.
You know, because I think it's much more of a physical sport back then, especially, you know, with the men. So I don't even, you know, I can't even compare Roger with me. But, you know, when somebody tells me my numbers of consistency and year after year after year, I'm quite impressed with that person. I can't relate to that person anymore because so much has happened. I'm a mom and, you know, I have a temper and now I get all flustered and now I can't concentrate. But back then, you know, I seemed to just take it on stride and I had some great concentration.
13 years in a row, you win at least one major, 18 overall. I spoke to Steve Flink and he said, you know, one of the things I think that was so different about Chris was the fact that she always was able to live in the moment. And you're going to ask her all these questions about things that she did in her past and she's not going to remember because she doesn't dwell on it. Is that maybe something that people could learn a lesson from nowadays, which is part of the secret of your success and your greatness, was the fact that you were continually looking forward, looking toward the next achievement, the next goal, the next tournament?
Yeah, I didn't celebrate. I mean, I kind of wish I would have celebrated my victories a little bit more at the time, but I was the kind of person that, you know, if I won Wimbledon, I was so happy. We celebrated that night, but once the next morning came, it was all business for whatever tournament was next on the agenda. So if it was a small city in America, then Wimbledon would soon be forgotten and my mind would be on, I've got to win this week, I've got to win this tournament, I've got to get myself in the best shape possible. So, you know, I don't know if you're born with that or you sort of cultivate it and learn it yourself, or if it was just because I was hungry and I had a lot of motivation for the game. But the mental part like that always came easy for me. The physical part was the part that came a little tougher and I had to work on.
I think all of us that have followed your career over the years know exactly where you got a lot of what made you tick. And that was from a person that you lost this year. The great Jimmy Everett was, you know, obviously your father and your mentor and your coach. Just talk about that relationship. I know that as we go into the holidays, you'll be thinking a lot about him. Tell us about the relationship and how he sort of helped you develop this sense of becoming the champion that you did.
Well, he started me, you know, he was a tennis pro himself. And then after getting married and settling down, he became a teaching pro. So he started all his kids playing at about 5 years old. So, I mean, it was sort of a family affair. The whole family played. And that's what kept us all together every single day in the summer after school. And, you know, he just was my role model and an inspiration. And, you know, I was the obedient daughter. And when he said, you got to work hard, I worked hard. But I kind of was forced into it. And then after a few years, I realized that I was developing friendships and I was going to some fun places and playing some tournaments and I started to enjoy the competition. But yeah, he was, you know, very humble and very down to earth. And I think he kept me from getting a big head. And, you know, when I came home, I still had my chores. And I think a lot of somebody's success has to do with the parents and, you know, how they're treated and, what the environment is around that person. But you know, my dad did pass away a couple months ago, and but you know, he lived to 91, so he had a great life and a quality life, and he was a big influence, no doubt.
I'm joined today on kickserveradio.com by the great, the one and only Chris Everett. Chris, with the relationship that you had with your father and now the ones that you have with your kids, and the fact that you're part of, if not, you know, one of the main influences at the Everett Academy, how do you take what you learned from that relationship with your father, the relationship that you've got with your kids, and then pass on some advice to some of the tennis parents that we see in this day and age, which, you know, let's call it like it is. It's not always the most healthy of relationships that we see between American juniors and their parents nowadays.
The number one rule is to try to take the pressure off the kid. And, you know, I see parents really getting anxious for their children to do well. I see parents putting pressure on their children to do well, and, you know, saying things like, you know, we're giving up a lot for you, and this is an expensive academy, and we want you to, you know, to do your best, and little things like that. It's like, don't really need to be said unless the kids are really, you know, fooling around and not giving it their best effort. But, you know, my dad, to me, all he did was try to take the pressure off, because he knew that I put enough pressure on myself. So I think as a parent, that's what you have to do. You have to kind of get the kids to just stay relaxed, you know, stay focused, but just to go out there and try your best and play in a relaxed way. And, you know, I think that you're right. I think parents sometimes don't realize the vibes that they're giving off, because they're so nervous and they're so tense and they want it so bad for their kids, which is understandable. But, you know, I just think the parent's role is just to be a parent, to take the pressure off.
From a more technical perspective, Chris, I get accused all the time of being just such an old school teaching pro. And I hate to say it, but because of the fact that I mentioned the name Chris Everett on the court all the time, I feel like teaching people to produce their strokes in a similar fashion. I've put YouTube videos of you and e-blasts that I send to our club members and pictures of the follow through of your swings and that type of thing. And I still feel like your swings continue to endure the test of time. But we have so many pros and coaches that want to teach the Nadal forehand or the open stance Djokovic backhand. Where do you stand on how we should be teaching players to strike the ball to become steady, consistent, reliable ball strikers? Do you still feel like the way you hit the ball still has a lot of value in today's game?
No, I think I hit too flat a ball for today's game. The rackets are different. The strings are different. The balls are different. The grips are different. I would teach a semi-Western or a Western forehand grip because the rackets are so lively and whippy nowadays, uh-huh. And the strings are so lively that you need to really put enough spin on it and whip on it and acceleration on it in order for the ball to stay in on the other side of the court. So I would definitely do a semi-Western or a Western, but it's still low to high, you know, the same philosophy, low to high, backswing, follow through. You know, what I try to teach is to make the targets bigger in the court and to play solidly and still not to make a lot of errors. And I think that holds true all the top players. When you look at Halep and you look at Serena, you know, whoever is number one, number two, top 10. I mean, quite frankly, they don't make a lot of errors. You know, they're solid. They're solid players. So, you know, I try to teach to keep the targets big. And if you're a little tight and a little nervous, don't go for the lines. When you become more relaxed, then you can gradually make the court bigger, and then you can go for the lines a little bit more. You know, just reaching up high for your serve and just worrying about getting up on the ball and not worrying about coming down after your serve and moving your feet. I mean, I think moving is so important. It's like 50% of the game right now is really to move and to get into position and get to the ball. But, you know, the theories are still similar, but because the equipment's different, I think you have to tweak your grips and tweak your stroke a little bit more.
Chris, you just had your charity event in November, and this is something that has continued to grow. It's near and dear to your heart every November in Florida. Talk about the evolution and who are you guys benefiting?
Well, the charity is the Fight Against Drug Abuse here in South Florida, and it benefits a lot of centers and programs that focus on getting people back into the mainstream of living. It focuses on taking care of people that have drug addiction by, you know, housing them and giving them some therapy, giving them jobs, giving them education, kind of giving them a safe haven so that they can get off drugs and become clean and then get back to living a clean life with their family again. And we've been doing this for 26 years, and we've raised, I think, over $21 million. And it's that sort of thing that becomes almost judgmental to some people. And drug addiction is an illness,
right?
And it's something that shouldn't be judged. And I think I liked that part of it about giving people a second chance in life. And again, we have a pro celebrity once a year. It's like a 3 or 4 day deal. And we, and I invite my friends, Martina Navratilova supports it every year. And then my celebrity friends come from, you know, LA and New York, and we have Hit and Giggle for a couple of days. We have Black Tie Gala. And it just, this year, I think we raised about $600,000. So it's about giving back. Everybody in this world should be giving back something.
The one name that you mention with respect to the people that support that, and I know that there are a lot of A-list celebrities and tennis players, but the one name that you mention there is Martina. And it's been really a refreshing thing for those of us that have been sports fans for all these years that have two people, Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert, that have had arguably the greatest sports rivalry we've ever seen, 80 matches played, and yet you guys come out the other side of that deal as close as any two sisters that I've ever seen. Is that safe enough to say?
Yeah, we're very close. I mean, we're so much closer now than when we were playing. You know, it was. There were some moments when we didn't like each other and when we were too competitive,
right.
But for the most part, at the end of the day, we always had the respect and we always had each other's backs, you know, personally. If anything had happened to her in her personal life or vice versa, we'd be the first ones to support each other. But we certainly were very competitive on the tennis court. But she's turned out to be a very loyal friend to me. And it's just ironic that the two places that we've settled in America, South Florida and Aspen, Colorado, I mean, who would have known? We both are settled. I mean, we're both neighbors in two places in America. And I think that's just so funny. She was actually over my house yesterday for a few minutes.
Wow.
She came over and, you know, we just have a lot of history and we have a twinkle in our eye when we tell a lot of stories. And she'll say, remember that match in 78 when you hit me in the head? And, and, you know, we'll talk about things and, we'll always be close, you know, and she's really a good human being. And, it's just nice for her nice to have a friend like that.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the entire tennis community at large in this world for setting the example of the fact that you're able to have a fierce rivalry like you guys have had and then still have that friendship. And I think we're seeing that now evolve in the men's game. We've seen this Federer and Nadal Djokovic era, which I think as much as we love, you know, John and all the guys, you know, McEnroe from that era, obviously this is a much more dignified level of champions. I think you and Martina, safe to say, along with Billie Jean, really set that example.
Well, I tell you what, I think that the women had it a little bit more than the men because we had to work harder to build our sport and to sell our sport. And that's why Billie Jean's also a very good friend, as Pam Shriver. Most of my closest friends in the world are tennis players because we had to go through a lot of insecurities and adversity, and we tried to sell our sport. And at the end of the day, we were all in it together and we had compassion for each other.
Well, I want to tell you before we check out today, Chris, how much of a thrill it's been for me. And my wife, Sarah, is a huge Chris Evert fan.
Wait. Isn't Sarah having a birthday soon?
She actually is.
Her 50th?
Yeah, believe it or not. This is a secret that stays between you and I, by the way.
You know what? She doesn't look a day over 30. You can tell her that for me.
She will love
hearing
that from Chris Evert. She modeled her tennis game after you and will appreciate it. But I took her to see Trainwreck. And when you came on the screen, you made a comment and it had her kind of, her eyes got real big and she put her hand over her mouth.
I'm
sure you can imagine, but that was so much fun and it was so cute and it was taken in the right way.
By the way, I said a word in there that you're talking about that I looked over at my son who was there and I said, what does that mean? Am I going to get fired from ESPN? What is that exactly? Does that mean? But it was a ball and I had a ball that day. LeBron James, he's a doll.
Well, you were working with LeBron, and you're working with, you know, Amy Schumer, and Marv Albert was in that clip. And I mean,
Matthew Broderick.
That's right. My God, that was an all-star cast. That had to be a blast for you.
It was.
Well, Chris, I've been trying to connect. I've been doing this for, you know, just about a decade now, and you were always on my A-list since the time I saw you play at Brookhaven Country Club sitting next to my buddy Craig Carden, and we watched you play at the Slims of Dallas in 74, I believe.
Well, then Craig went on to coach Martina Navratilova after that.
Yes, he did.
And he's still out there coaching. He's still doing a great job.
He's got his hands full with Coco, but she had a good year in 2015. Yep. Do you think that's a good matchup, Craig Carden and Coco Vandeweghe?
Excellent matchup. He's great because he has the right combination of being tough and being gentle. So, and she's, you know, she isn't going to listen to everybody. So I think it's a good combination.
I'm wishing the best for them and continued success with everything that you're doing as part of the A-team with ESPN and working with the people that you do. And Chris, again, you've been an idol of mine since I was a kid, and it's really a treat to be able to chat with you at the holidays.
Well, Steve Link speaks very highly of you, so thank you, Andy.
My pleasure, Chris. Happy holidays, and hopefully we can do this again in 2016.
We will.